This is Florida Matters. I'm Robin Sussingham. For years, using e-cigarettes or vaping has been seen as a good way to quit smoking. But lately, there have been a spate nationally of serious lung injuries related to vaping, and at least 37 people have died. In Florida, there have been 87 cases with one death. How do we measure the risks from vaping against the benefits? Here in the studio to help walk us through it, we have Kevin Sneed, the Dean of the University of South Florida's College of Pharmacy, and Jackie Toledo, Republican State Representative for District 60 in Tampa. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So, Kevin, can you describe for me exactly what vaping is for people who might not know, and what kind of injuries are we starting to see from it?
You know, we've gotten away from tobacco smoking. And now we have a liquid that is put into a cartridge, and when you heat the cartridge up and inhale it, it turns the liquid solvent into a vape. It's inhaled and then exhaled in the very same way that we have traditionally seen people do with tobacco smoking. But now we have that cartridge full of solvent, liquid. It's inhaled. It produces a very heavy smoke. It's flavored. And so over time, people thought it might be a good alternative to smoking. But now we're seeing much more lung injury.
What kind of lung injury?
Well, I'll tell you what, that's all over the map right now in terms of the types of lung injury. Right now, the most injurious one is called popcorn lung, where really you go in and you kind of almost obliterate the tissue.
Oh.
Right there in the lung, it's irreversible. And we think that may be what is causing many of the lung injury around the country. However, there have been a number of other chemicals identified. Formaldehyde has been identified in vaping. A chemical called acrolein has been identified.
So they're seeing some, it's almost like chemical burns in the lungs.
Absolutely. Yeah, to an extent, we can look at it, maybe chemical injury might be a good way to put it.
Yeah.
And even getting to the point of DNA changes in the oral mucosa of the mouth.
Now, there have been around 1,900 cases across the country. And this started around March of this year. Jackie, you've introduced legislation that's related to vaping. Explain the bill that you're introducing to the legislature.
Thank you. And actually filed the bill last year, and it almost got passed. It passed through the Senate.
So you filed this bill last year before all of these lung injuries?
Yes, because I could tell there was writing on the wall that this is a dangerous product and it's being unregulated. There's no education on it. And parents thought it was just vapor. Kids thought it was just vapor. And I knew that if we didn't act, that it would become an epidemic, and it has become an epidemic. And I just don't want to be, I don't want Florida to be last in trying to solve and prevent these deaths and injuries from happening.
So what does your bill do? I mean, you're not making e-cigarettes illegal for adults, are you?
No. What the bill would do would increase the age of smoking and vaping to 21. It would make these nicotine dispensing devices part of the tobacco products so that we can regulate them like we do tobacco products. And this year we added the ban on the flavor of vapes, and we also including the smoking of medical marijuana as well to 21.
I know that, Kevin, a big concern with vaping and with e-cigarettes, I'm going to use that interchangeably, it's been the children using it, down to middle schoolers even. It's gotten so popular. I think I saw a statistic, maybe 25% of high school students now are saying that they've tried it or they're doing it.
Absolutely. Let me go back just for a moment. Mm-hmm. You know, we knew years ago that even nicotine in a very young age could lead to some type of, I don't want to all the way call it brain injury, but changes in what we call the prefrontal cortex of the brain. And so now, but we didn't have a lot of people smoking at that time. Now that we've had a lot more middle school and high school people smoking, now the interest in terms of what is the nicotine doing to the brain, what is happening in terms of development of the brain, and what will that lead to later on in life, that's becoming much more of an issue. And so I agree completely. Having young people, period, whether it be 18 or below, just shouldn't be smoking at all.
Okay, so you're interchangeably saying smoking. Let's keep it to smoking versus vaping.
Well, I'm actually saying smoking as well because, you know, the initial studies that were done actually did indicate that just smoking, the nicotine in a cigarette smoke, could have an effect on the brain and the developing brain of an adolescent. But we didn't have a lot of people smoking. Now we've had many more people doing vaping, and now we're going back and having to restudy and reevaluate where we are with nicotine in the developing brain of adolescents all the way up through 18. So I'm putting smoking and vaping in the very same category for young people.
Okay. And this is where it gets kind of complicated, because there were a lot more kids in high school who were smoking cigarettes. Now, teen smoking levels are at an all-time low. And some people say, hey, you know, maybe, you know, vaping is a lot safer than smoking cigarettes. Some studies say 95% safer. And that's, we're talking about adults. So maybe it's helping the teen smoking, cigarette smoking levels come down because they're trying, you know, vaping.
Well, let me give an alternative thought to that even. You know, several years back in maybe 2012, I went to China and I saw a factory where they manufacture the e-cigarette juice. And I became very concerned even back then about the solvent. You know, we forget that we're dissolving nicotine into a liquid that we have to be able to heat up and not have it explode in your face and not have it burn your mouth. And then the volume of inhaling is far more than what we were doing even with a single cigarette. And so even though we may have seen more smoking, cigarette smoking with children earlier, many about a decade ago, I'm really concerned about not just only the chemicals, but the volume of chemicals that we're pushing across the lung. Because if you walk around, you can see people, you know, they have a very, very big vape machine, and it has a lot of juice, and they're inhaling just an enormous amount.
Is this regulated at all?
It's not regulated, and that's part of the problem right now. The FDA has not come in and put any stipulation on identification of the chemicals that go into the vaping, the cartridges.
Let me just go with you, Jackie, for a second,
yes.
Because one of the things I think that we want to talk about is selling to adults versus kids vaping, which is what you're wanting to do with your legislation. The question I have is, right now it's illegal for minors under 18, right, to be sold vaping products and e-cigarettes. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, so 18 and under shouldn't be vaping right now at all. You're changing, but they are.
They are.
They are in big numbers. So how is changing the age limit from 18 to 21 going to stop them from vaping when they're vaping now at a cutoff age of 18?
So right now, that's a great question. Right now, we have about 160,000 18-year-olds in our high schools. So this bill is about access. And these kids are getting these products from their peers, people that they're in school with, their brothers and sisters. So if we just increase the age to 21, we'll result in a 55% reduction in tobacco use between 18 and 20, and about a 61% reduction in children 14 to 17.
Just tobacco use, you're meaning traditional?
And vaping use, both. And you had mentioned earlier the trends of people smoking. Kids smoking, and you had mentioned that it was increasing. It was actually decreasing if you look at the trends.
I said we're at historic lows for teen smoking.
Yes,
now.
And it has been trending that way for many years. We were at an all-time low of 8.8% of kids or high schoolers smoking. And that's when I believe, and I think it's because it wasn't cool to smoke. People had that, so it wasn't socially acceptable to smoke. So now they came up with a new product. The same companies, these big tobacco companies, came up with a new product that's cool. They targeted young people with the flavors of cotton candy. They started creating these ads that had younger people in it. So it made it look like it was cool. It's on Snapchat. I mean, I know they've pulled a lot of this marketing and advertising to young people, but
They pulled it
because we started to want to regulate it. We started pushing for bills. So it goes hand in hand. They may self-regulate, but we also need to have some sort of legislation to protect our youth. And that's what this bill will do. And I truly believe that increasing the age of smoking and vaping and anything putting into your lungs will help decrease the access that they have.
Let me add a quick point to that as well because
you know, when electronic cigarettes first came out, we weren't having all of the flavoring that we have right now. But as time went on and we saw much more flavoring, now we're really questioning whether or not the flavoring is leading to some of the lung injury. And so I know the FDA has paid particular attention to that. You were asking earlier, you know, right now in the adulterated cartridge of, you know, people just injecting their own or making their own.
Getting off the street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're finding, you know, vitamin E samples, for example, that are in these cartridges.
What's that about? I read about that. Vitamin E.
Acetate.
Yeah. Why would someone be... would buy that? Like, what's the attraction to putting vitamin E in your vaping? Like, you're supposed to be healthy, or
I'm not really sure what the attraction for that has been. But
they're finding infections.
They're finding it in a lot more of the adulterated products, and as a result of that, we're finding a lot more injury. And it hadn't always been that way. So there has been a marked transition in wherever we started, maybe 10 years ago to now. But we are here now, and I'm very, very much in favor of everything that Representative Toledo is doing.
I want to talk about the flavors. You said that they've started flavoring more. And the thing is that the flavors are popular with adults, too. I mean, you say cotton candy, whatever, you know, is marketed towards kids, and it does sound like it. But as a matter of fact, those are the popular flavors. And so some critics say, well, banning the flavors that are popular for adults, for the fruit flavors, and saying, okay, we're going to ban those flavors. First of all, who decides which flavors are acceptable and which flavors aren't? And then second of all, if adults can't have the flavors they like and they're told, well, you can only have nicotine-flavored or tobacco-flavored vaping, they might say, well, you know what, I'll just smoke a cigarette then. And that's really what doctors are trying to get the patients away from. I mean, I understand that there's a lot of concerns with minors and children doing this. They shouldn't be smoking cigarettes either. But this has been a godsend to a lot of adults who had a very hard time giving up cigarettes and were able to ingest the nicotine through vaping and get off the cigarettes.
So you make a good point. It was meant to be a cessation device, but it's not acting like that because kids are starting to vape because of the flavors. If you're a cigarette smoker, then you like the smell of tobacco. You like that.
Well, so, the fruit flavors are actually the most popular across the board.
It is. If I was a smoker, I'd rather smoke mango flavored than I would a tobacco flavored. Mm-hmm. But if you're used to tobacco flavor and that's all they had, then it wouldn't be a problem to go to a tobacco-flavored vape. But now you have, as you said, about 50% of high schoolers have tried vaping because of these flavors. Not because, I mean, you can't show a child, here, taste this, and it's tobacco. No one's going to try it.
Right. But adults might not like it either. And there's also the concern that banning the flavors will make the black market, what we were just talking about, these adulterated substances, more attractive because that's where they'll be able to get what they want. So if you don't have the regulated flavors that are popular that people want to vape, including adults, then they will be driven to. That's just another concern. They'll be driven back to the black market.
I know that may be a possibility, but right now we're dealing with a potential public health crisis. And so, you know, therefore, regulation must take hold. When you know that you have a looming problem, you act. I'm glad that we have people in our state that are doing that. And more importantly, I think along with that, we'll go an enormous amount of public health education. We need to re-educate people about that. And then we need to encourage the FDA to potentially go in and actually regulate and know exactly what chemicals are going in. There's no standardization of the types of chemicals and solvents that are going into the cartridges. Maybe we need to start there. And maybe we need to make people aware that if you don't have something that's been approved and we can identify exactly what's in there, because we do have regulation, that maybe you put yourself at risk if you do go to the black market. And so I think we're heading in the right direction. I think public health issues should always rise up, and I think regulation is needed.
We're going to take a short break right now. You're listening to Florida Matters. We'll be right back. This is Florida Matters. I'm Robin Sessingham, and today we're talking about e-cigarettes and vaping. My guests in the studio are Kevin Sneed, Dean of the University of South Florida College of Pharmacy, and Jackie Toledo, Republican State Representative for District 60 in Tampa. I wanted to read you something. Michael Siegel, I don't know if you've heard of him. He's a professor in the Department of Community Health Sciences at Boston University School of Public Health. He's a tobacco researcher, and he's been an anti-tobacco advocate for many decades. And he's frustrated with this anti-vaping movement. And he says that, and with this, he's frustrated with the CDC because he feels like the Centers for Disease Control is sending muddled messages. He says, instead of fear-mongering, the CDC should be giving useful advice. At a minimum, it should warn the public not to vape THC oils. Second, it should caution against using any oil-based e-liquid product. Third, it should advise people not to use any e-liquid unless they know what is in it. That is, do not buy products on the street. Stick to products being sold at retail stores, especially closed cartridges where there's no risk of contamination. And he says, unfortunately, there is such an anti-vaping prejudice and growing bias against the use of e-cigarettes for smoking cessation that many are hoping to be able to attribute these cases to traditional nicotine vaping. So he's frustrated with the muddled messages that he says the CDC is sending. What do you say to that?
Well, until we can figure out what's causing these illnesses, we should send a clear message. You mentioned a muddled message, and that's what's happening, is children, parents of these children don't know if these products are bad. They can't tell whether something was store-bought or bought at off the street. So if we send a clear message, either banning the flavored vapes, because maybe there are flavors that are non-harmful, but there are flavors with the chemical combination that is causing these injuries. But until we identify them, we should protect the public. And that's what we're trying to do. And maybe reintroduce them back to when we can say they're safe products.
But protecting the public, smoking is the biggest killer, the biggest preventable killer of people in the United States.
But it takes decades before you get cancer, and then you have cancer, which can some be treated. People are smoking, vaping for 2 years and dying after 2 years of vaping.
Okay,
or less.
People were vaping for how many years before this crisis came up? This started in March, and it's been linked to THC, adulterated THC products. So what about going after these street products rather than going after the industry? And Jackie, another thing I wanted to ask you, because you are a business owner. Mm-hmm. What about the businesses? What about all these independent small vape shops that would be hurt by your legislation?
Well, I think there's parts of my legislation that could help these vape shops. For example, I think it's best to have the vapes sold only in vape shops, not at the convenience store where you are mixing children and, no one's asking what age you are. But if you're only going like a liquor store, you have to be 21 to enter a liquor store or be accompanied by a parent. But the clerks are notified that look at the age of the person buying, be more aware. Whereas in the convenience stores, at the CVS, at all stores that sell these vapes, they're not looking at
who's
buying.
They may not be checking ID.
They're not checking ID.
But is that part of your bill?
That is a consideration that we're having. But I'm speaking to all the stakeholders because, I'm a small business owner. I believe that there is an audience for these products and it can help some people. But it's being targeted to our youth. And that's what this bill targets, is 18 to 21 and the banning of flavored vapes, which I think is what attracts young people to these products. But like I've told vape shop owners and I've told different coalitions that have come to see me, I'm open to suggestions, but we have to do something.
You can't walk into any grocery store and pick up any product and without seeing everything and every known chemical that's in our food supply. But right now, we have no regulation. We have no idea. We have no identification of the chemicals that are actually in the vapes because they haven't been regulated. And so I agree with Representative Toledo that we should get to a point of once we begin to identify what is safe, what is not safe, when we can have regulation that will make everybody identify exactly what's in all of the vape cartridges, maybe we can begin a process of thinking about trying to reintroduce it. But right now, without that level of control, what we have is a public health crisis.
So, Kevin, you travel a lot, and I know, did you speak to people, your colleagues overseas that are in pharmacy academia, as you are? I know in the UK, they have very different ideas about this than we do. The medical associations in Britain feel that vaping is far safer than smoking. They feel that the actions and these warnings in the U.S. are overblown. Why do you think there's such a cultural difference between the way that they're looking at it? They think we're in a sort of a panic here about vaping.
I don't know the overall statistics of what we have going on in the U.K. or anywhere else in Europe. What I can tell you is that very often, culturally, the way that they are approaching it, the way that they may be approaching adulterated products and black market products is probably far different than what we have here. They have, generally you find a much more open market over there. You have a much more open healthcare system over there. And so, I think driving things underground probably has a lot more injury. We've identified that that THC-laced products probably have caused the majority of the injuries, but we don't know that for certain. Whether or not that will be the case in the UK, Europe, or anywhere else around the world, one thing that we do know is we have a public health crisis here in our country, and that we need to take every measure that we can put out there to protect our citizens and especially protect our young people.
I think the difference we have there is that they're taking, maybe there are more smokers in Europe. I think there are.
Absolutely.
More people still
Well, there's
smoking.
Always been more smokers in Europe.
Yeah. I mean, actually, any other country.
Well, and they're
without
looking,
filters, I mean.
And they're looking at smoking as much. When you talk about a public health crisis, I mean, some of the CDC numbers that I was just reading before was that smoking has killed more Americans than all of the wars combined. They also say that more than 10 times as many U.S. citizens have died prematurely from cigarette smoking than have died in all the wars fought by the United States. So when you're looking at smoking, 480,000 deaths per year they're linking to smoking, people have differing views on this.
Well, again, we talk about the acuity of the situation right now. 10 years ago, we didn't have people waking up with popcorn lung. 10 years ago, we didn't have people dying. We weren't identifying the fact that flavored vaping was an issue. But now we wake up, and in a very short amount of time, the acceleration of the deaths is really what we should be looking at, not just the raw number. As Representative Toledo mentioned earlier, it can take you 10, 20, maybe 30, 40 years before you develop a lung cancer from smoking a cigarette. But all of a sudden, people who have been vaping for a very short amount of time are going into the hospital, they're going into the ER, they're dying. And so once you identify a problem, I think, you don't stand back and wait for more of a problem to develop. I think you take action, especially when you begin thinking about the long-term ramification of what it may mean for a child. A 15-year-old right now, we don't want them having a public health-induced problem at age 30 that we could have taken care of today. And I think, that's why I'm very much in favor of what we're doing. And we have to, of course, from an academic standpoint, we need to do far more research in this area. The CDC does not have all the answers right now. They don't know what they're chasing down. But every day we wake up, we're getting more information. I can tell you right now, my biggest issue is the fact that the chemicals and the vaping alter the DNA in the mouth. And that's telling me that potentially, 10, 15 years down the road, we may have a whole litany of people that have oral cancer, and nobody may remember that it began 15 years earlier because they were vaping. So I think we need much more research in the area to make sure we're identifying the problems. And if we identify safe areas, then maybe we can begin a reintroduction campaign.
So, Jackie, your legislation is catching on. The Hillsborough County Commissioners just approved a new ordinance that raises the legal vaping age from 18 to 21 years old, makes it illegal for stores to sell products to underage customers, and prohibits anyone under the age of 21 from even possessing a vaping device or other paraphernalia. So I think a lot of parents might look at this and go, this is just another way for my child to get in trouble. What is he? He's, got a vaping device and now he's going to have a record for the rest of his life because, half the people in his high school are doing it. And now it's going to go on his record. And now what? Are these too heavy handed?
I mean, if I'm a parent and I have 5 children, and if this could save their life, then yes, I'd rather them have And you don't know what kind of penalties this would have on it. So I think right now we're just wanting to send a clear message.
From what I understand, I mean, you're really concentrating on underage.
Underage.
But you're also feeling that this is just unsafe devices. So, I mean, would you just like to see this whole thing taken off the market and done with?
You know, that's a very dangerous question to ask a healthcare clinician. I mean, there's a whole host of things that we have out there that we, you know, from a public health standpoint, we see as potentially being injurious to a lot of people. However, I will say that if we can start with children and we can protect our children, if we can start there, then we can begin a continued education program for adults. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have no, you know, it's no different than heart disease. You know, we know that there's a lot of things out there that can contribute to heart disease, but we're not going out and telling people you can't eat red meat and you can't, you know, we're not trying to regulate, you know, people from going
Thank
and
God.
Enjoying themselves. I mean, but we do understand, however, that there's a lot of things that can contribute to heart disease. But here we have an opportunity to actually re-educate people about what should be safe. We have an opportunity to protect our young, and we have an opportunity to really go in and do research early on before it becomes numbers very similar to what you quoted around cigarette smoking.
Do you think vaping can be made safer?
You know, I can tell you right now, back in 2012 when I first saw the devices, I held great hope for the actual device itself. But I had concerns even back then. I had concerns almost 8 years ago now. And I still have the concerns, and I think we're waking up and those concerns are being realized. And I think there can be a good thing that can come from understanding the technology better, but we must do the research in order to get there so that we can have a safe product on the market for people.
That's Kevin Snee, Dean of the University of South Florida College of Pharmacy. We're also talking with Jackie Toledo, Republican State Representative for District 60 in Tampa. Thank you both so much for being with me.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Absolutely.
There are lots of ways to connect with us. You can tweet us at Florida Matters or find us on the WUSF Facebook page. You can listen to Florida Matters whenever it's convenient for you as a podcast. Search for it and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Florida Matters is a production of WUSF Public Media. The engineer is George Govan. The show is produced by Christy O'Shana. I'm Robin Sussingham. Thanks for listening.